You are listening to Eastside Radio Podcast.
89.7 FM, Eastside Radio.
You told me goodbye, and I believed you. Felt like I would die. To be all the good times we had, we'll have again. All the good times.
Well, Eastside Radio operates from studios in Paddington and here at Bondi Beach. Both of them are within the New South Wales electorate of Vaucluse. The electorate comprises around about 25 square kilometres and contains something approaching 60,000 enrolments. In fact, it's one of the smallest but most densely populated electorates in New South Wales, and two-thirds of the electorate live in high-rise flats and apartments. Now, today, I have the honour of being joined in the studio by the New South Wales Liberal member for Vaucluse in the lower house, Kelly Sloan. Kelly is a former journalist and broadcaster, and she's brought a strong communication style and a community focus to politics into a notoriously rowdy bear pit that is the New South Wales Parliament. And I'm honoured to welcome her here today. Kelly Sloan, welcome to Monday Drive.
Alan, it's so good to be here, and the honour is all mine.
Wonderful for you to be here, and I do note that you were doing quite a dance during that.
How could I not? I love the Hoodoo Gurus, and, you know, they remind me of Bondi, the good times at Bondi. And I know the band members spent quite a bit of time here, including Dave Faulkner.
Okay, well, we might come back to a little bit more of the good times a little bit later up, because we really do want to talk to you. You grew up in the Barossa Valley and describe yourself as a country girl at heart. Now, your parents still live there and your father has just retired as mayor of the Barossa Valley. Are there any similar values between the country and the city which you now represent?
I do see similar values in places like Bondi, where you've had generations of people growing up here who have strong ties to the community, and you can still see that, and have those stories to tell. You can find community wherever you go, but it's particularly pronounced, I think, in country areas, in regional areas, where community is your lifeblood. You rely on each other. When there are natural disasters, you are there for each other. And but again, I find that community wherever I go, and I've seen it here in the East, and I love that, the way we pull together.
Your dad was the mayor of the Barossa Valley. That's got to be a great job, hasn't it?
Isn't it the best job in politics in the country?
Well, why didn't you do something on that level?
I could have. I'm not sure how I ended up where I am today in state parliament. And I think perhaps it's partly due to some of the work I did before I got into politics as the CEO of Life Education, Healthy Harold, sort of delivering education programs to kids around the state. And that gave me the ability to check in and connect with politicians of all stripes right around New South Wales and the country.
Well, you were the chief executive of that not-for-profit Life Education outfit. But before that, you were also a journalist. You were a journalist with the ABC. You worked with the Nine Network for 14 years. Tell us about the ABC. Tell us about your early recollections. Who did you interview first, and what was your first question?
So I started in ABC radio, you're right. So I have a love of radio, which is why when I get into studios like this, Alan, I get tremendously excited because my first love was radio. And then you asked me who my first interview was with, and it was a really hard one to forget because my very first interview as a fresh, shiny, young 18-year-old was with the Premier of the time, a man called John Bannon. So I was excited and tremendously nervous, and I had a work experience student with me who was older than me and had to kind of help me with the tape recorder. So it was quite the life experience. I couldn't for the life of me remember what I asked him or what he said, but I do remember the feeling of thinking, you know what, I've absolutely made it.
For an 18-year-old, that's got to be a pretty intimidating situation, hasn't it? Being in what was a new environment for you at that time. And talking to the Premier of the state.
I know. I do remember the nerves. I remember it being exciting. But I also, I think that's something about growing up in the country. You just have this get up and go, get things done mentality. And, you know, I've always been someone that's jumped right in and had a crack. And, you know, if you don't have a crack, you don't have those memorable moments that you reflect on years later.
Well, was that get up and go also responsible for your dancing with John Travolta?
Well,
and tell us whereabouts it was.
How long do you have? Let me explain that moment. So for people who don't understand the context, when I was at Channel 9, I got to do all sorts of interesting stuff. I, you know, got to meet interesting people, travel around the world and cover all sorts of events. And I got to meet people like John Travolta. He was one of the highlights. So I managed to get an exclusive with him on his new private jet, which he'd repurposed an old Qantas jet into his own private jet. And I got an exclusive tour and we were wandering through the plane and I said, do you mind if we get a quick photo? I don't usually ask for photos. And he goes, of course. And so he grabbed me and put me into like a dance position and we started dancing. And for me, that was one of those pinch me moments because as a little girl, I'd grown up watching Grease and here I was with Danny, you know. And so he took me around the plane. He showed me through to the bathroom and everywhere. And then that story went sort of global, went on Entertainment Tonight in the US. And remember the commentator, the show host saying, one lucky Aussie reporter, you know, got an exclusive with Johnny. And I had some fun. There was the fun stuff. I got to go to the Oscars, do things like that. But I also got to cover, you know, deep tragedies, bushfires, floods, the Bali bombings. You know, I got to meet regular people as well in regular lives facing and confronting sometimes very difficult situations. So it was a privilege to be with people in those moments that made the news.
Okay, well, fast forward just a little bit. You were elected member for Vaucluse in 2023 and you went straight to the front bench and were then elevated to the senior shadow portfolio of health only a few months later. And that's, I think, Matt Keane quit the parliament. That's what enabled that to happen. Did you have any say in that?
I certainly did. I put my hand up. So Matt left or said he was leaving. And then I kind of waited a decent 24 hours and walked into Mark Speakman's office, the leader's office, and said, I would love to do health. I know it's a big portfolio, a very senior one. I have a passion for, you know, health and well-being of people, particularly kids, because the job I'd had prior, as I mentioned before, was looking at kids' prevention, really, how to ensure that they have the tools to manage both their mental and their physical health. And you know, I was very fortunate that Mark put that trust in me, and I've worked very hard and you know, to make sure that we're putting up a good standing in health in New South Wales and holding the government to account on the things that I think are important.
So you don't think health is a poison chalice?
No. Well, do you know, I think it's a really difficult space.
Absolutely.
You know, and I would say for the minister as well, it's a very difficult space.
Yep.
But I think it's so important. And when I talk to people around our state, whether it's in Walgett or whether it's in, you know, Wagga Wagga or whether it's in Woollahra, you know, people, one at the top of their list is obviously cost of living issues and health is a close second. Yeah. And, you know, all we want is to live a long and healthy life. We want our kids to be resilient and strong. And for all of those reasons, I think health is a tough space, but it's such an important one.
Well, on the matter of health, and in fact getting back to the electorate of Vaucluse and New South Wales more generally, in recent months there have been concerns mounting about the rapid spread of illegal tobacco and vaping stores, many of which operate with very, very little regard for health laws or community safety. And you've been a very strong and vocal voice in calling for decisive action to shut down these dodgy operations, arguing that illegal tobacconists not only endanger the health of young people, but also they undermine the legitimate business of public health. How widespread is the problem across Sydney and the regional areas, do you think?
Well, to give you an immediate example, within a short walk of where you and I are here on Bondi Pavilion, there are 11 different tobacconists. 8 of them have popped up in the last couple of years. Wow. Now, we're seeing that right across the state. 19,500 tobacconists in New South Wales, and that's an increase of about 5,000 in the last 4 years. So this proliferation at a time when supposedly, smoking rates are reducing.
Yeah.
So they're popping up everywhere because of illicit tobacco. And I think I obviously had a passion around this issue, around tobacco education, before I came into Parliament. But then there was a moment when a local school principal rang me up and said, "Kelly, what do we do? A tobacconist has popped up across the road, literally from our local school.
Mm.
They're selling brightly coloured American chips and lollies. Mm. How on earth do they make a profit?" Well, we know how they make a profit, some of these businesses. So that sort of got me on a journey of trying to figure out how we could stop these. And I was very fortunate. I worked on, with my team for about 18 months on a piece of legislation that we offered up in New South Wales Parliament. And, the Premier said, I like what you're doing. And it was a real moment of bipartisanship where the Labor government took on the coalition's legislation. And we passed that legislation in Parliament, and hopefully we can make at least a dent in what we're seeing happening across the state.
And how quickly do you think post-legislation the action will, the impact will be felt?
Well, the problem is there's not enough enforcement.
Right.
So, what's the point of having some of these laws if you don't have peak compliance officers out there cracking down on these dodgy operators, who, by the way, many of them are run by criminal gangs who are bringing crime to neighbourhoods across the state as well. So I have been calling for a massive crackdown, even if it's just a short-term crackdown, to flush out the dodgy operators, to shut down their shops and to try and get a hold of this problem as quickly as we can.
Well, more strength to you. Well done on that one. Let's talk about e-bikes.
Mm.
Now, their popularity has grown rapidly across New South Wales because they offer convenience, they are affordable, and they're probably fairly environmentally friendly as a transport option. But they also represent a safety issue, and there appear to me to be no regulatory considerations about
them.
You're right. And in fact, speeding on shared paths and unregistered and modified bikes, they're hideous. They're horrible. And I have actually witnessed a rather elderly lady coming to grief by virtue of one of these speeding things. And thank goodness you're calling for clearer rules to ensure e-bikes can coexist safely with pedestrians and motorists and other cyclists. So, how well are the current laws equipped to deal with these bikes?
Well, up until recently, we have been, to your point, in a regulatory desert. There have been no rules. It's been the Wild West when it comes to e-bikes, whether it's the line bike riders, whether it's the Deliveroo guys, whether it's young kids in our neighbourhoods on those, fat bikes.
Right.
So we've been calling for a while for there to be some sort of at least rules. And I've met with the e-bike providers, sat down with them, and to be fair to them, they've been calling out for regulation as well.
Yeah.
And I have to call out, commend Waverley Council here and where the Mayor, Will Nemish, who, in lieu of any laws being in place, came out and said, "You know what? You're going to abide by our rules. You're going to sign this MOU, a Memorandum of Operation of Understanding. And if you don't, we're going to collect your bikes and we're going to cart them away."
And these are the operators he's talking to.
Yeah. Yep. And they responded to that and signed up, to their credit. And we've got a much better situation here in Waverley. Now, last week, new laws were introduced into state parliament to pretty much do that across the state.
Mm.
It was really the Waverley model, and so we've supported that.
You said, going back a few minutes ago, that the illegal tobacco regime, in order to overcome that illegal regime, enforcement measures are needed.
Yeah.
That's surely got to be the same with e-bikes, hasn't it?
Well, it does. And, but what it starts with is some rules and regulations, and the new laws will give the council powers to actually enforce this. So in other council areas where they might not have the gumption or the get up and go that we had here, they can actually require e-bike providers to put them in certain sections of, certain parking spots, make sure that they have helmets that fit and all of those things. But by the way, that doesn't fix the problem of the young kids in our neighbourhoods who are on their private bikes.
Right.
And that needs to be the next step, because I'm really worried. I'm really worried. I like e-bikes. I like that they're part. They're here to stay. But I'm so worried we're going to see a terrible accident and someone severely injured or worse because we haven't. The laws haven't caught up.
That's right. Well, I believe that serious accident actually occurred over the weekend. Mm. However, again, all strength to you in pushing for those regulations as well. We need it. You mentioned earlier that Mark Speakman, your boss, who gave you the position of Shadow Health Minister, he's the MP for Cronulla, although he lives in the Vaucluse electorate. In fact, his home backs onto the proposed Woollahra station. Should he be disqualified from a discussion about the station's fate?
So Mark actually lives in the Cronulla electorate, but he has a rental property. You're quite right. He owns property right next to the train station.
Right.
I think he's got no choice but to commentate on this. But to what he did very early on was declare he has a conflict of interest. Everyone's aware of it. Mm-hmm. And then they can take that into consideration when hearing his comments.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough. A recent Sydney Morning Herald article indicates that you are a contender for the leadership, knocking off Mark Speakman. Does he carry a mirror around so he can see what's going on behind his back?
Do you know what? Lucky, he is a confident man. And I think that's why, you know, he hasn't hesitated to elevate me in terms of going from, you know, the Environment Ministry into the Shadow Health portfolio. And look, I think I've because of Mark's trust in me, I've been able to have a platform to talk about issues that matter. And I would argue that perhaps Labor's giving us too much material to work with, which is why I've had the profile I've had. But no, I get along very well with Mark.
Will you be sending him a Christmas card?
Of course I will. Okay. Probably giving him a hug too.
Okay. Yes. And you don't think he's at all concerned about the prospect that there's rough waters out there?
Look, I think we're all worried whenever the story becomes about us. There's nothing people hate more than politicians talking about themselves, you know, because every moment there's a column inch dedicated to internal rumblings, it's a column inch that isn't dedicated to cost of living or e-bikes or tobacco or anything else. So I think we've all been annoyed that we haven't, you know, had the clear air to prosecute the things that matter to us, but we're certainly back, you know, doing that.
And those things that matter to you, in fact, those things upon which you were elected, were the environment, cost of living support measures, and also preserving the character of our community. Do those priorities even matter when you've been thrust into the health portfolio?
Oh, they absolutely matter. You know, this community will always come first for me. And, you know, the good thing is that I can walk and chew gum. I can look at health issues, which also are relevant to our community. But I can also be very focused on local environmental issues, sort of the planning laws which have come into play recently and any other matter for, you know, that constituents raise with me.
Right. Monday Drive has been in the very privileged position of having Allegra Spender come and spend some time with us and also some of the politicians from local councils in this particular area, and we're now honoured, of course, that you're here. So that's three levels of government. Is it too many? I mean, we're only 26 million people in the entire country. Do we need three levels of government?
Well, now, this is a hot issue. I'm going to land myself in trouble if I say too much about it. Can I say it works really well here in this part of the world? So you've got, you know, I've just spoken about Waverley Council, I think, are doing a tremendous job, also Woollahra, and then Allegra at federal level and me at state. We all work hand in hand very comfortably together, and there's a real delineation between the kinds of roles that we have. So I think it's working quite well. I know that, you know, who do you get rid of if you're getting rid of a layer? Well, a lot of people have suggested local government, but I believe our local community really appreciates the role of local government, that sort of grassroots advocacy. When I go door knocking and knock on people's houses and ask them, what is it that worries you? Sort of 8 out of 10 times people raise issues, it will be local government issues. Mm. So I think local government has a very important role to play. At state level, we can be focused on roads and education and health and the environment. And at federal level, they can have a bigger picture. So at the moment, I think our democracy works well. Our institutions are respected. And You know, long may there be not too much overlap.
Yes, yes, indeed. One area where there may well be some overlap, the men's shed. Now, that's in your electorate. It's in Waverley Council's electorate, and it's also in Allegra Spender's electorate. Now, the men's shed serves a significant number of men's needs, and it also serves the needs of your community. And I might add that it's shortly to embrace women in its numbers as well. So it's not going to be the men's shed, it's going to be the shed. So that's going to involve more of your constituents than it has in the past. But it may shortly cease to exist because the premises in which it is currently housed are being resumed by the lessor for expansion works, and that's fair enough. Federal member Allegra Spender is trying to assist with defence land, and the question is, are you aware of the dilemma and do you endorse its closure?
So I don't want to see it close at all, and I'm very well aware. I went and visited the men's shed and spoke to Peter and the team there. It sits just outside of my electorate, but it does serve at least a third of its members come from my community.
That's right.
I'm really passionate about supporting mental health and particularly for men in our community who I think find it tougher. This is a very broad and generic sweeping statement, but that's why men's sheds were established, to give men a space to come together and talk about issues that sometimes they're not comfortable talking about in other spaces. So I after those conversations, wrote to both the councils looking for space. We advocated, we looked at areas around sort of near Neilson Park, and it's the East is crowded and it's been very difficult to find a solution.
Right. Well, it is a solution that needs to be found. Yeah. And the clock is ticking because I believe they've only got till the end of next year, 2026, not only to find somewhere else, but to have moved to it. So because it's a sort of a question without notice, as it were, can I ask that your office and Allegra Spender's office communicate and between the two of you embrace or involve Woollahra Council in an attempt to put the pressure on whoever needs to come to the party to find them a home?
Absolutely. And look, what I think would also be helpful is if we rope in the Labor member for Coogee as well, Marjorie O'Neill, because it sits in her electorate currently, or that's where it was housed. So we'll all work together, Labor, Liberal, Independent and local government.
Yes. And federal. There you go. There's a good reason for all three of you to coexist.
And we know you've put us on notice, but we actually work really well together. Oh, there's someone smiling and doing a love heart at the back. Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah. That's very nice. Getting the feedback out there.
I'm not sure he realises that we actually can't hear him. But anyway, that's the way it is. So as far as the men's shed is concerned, I will look forward to talking with either you, Allegra, or any of the others with some good news in the near future. And thank you for offering to become involved with that. Do you own a cat?
No, I don't. I have a large, fluffy golden retriever dog.
Okay. Well, Sue Higginson, the Green MP, has introduced a bill to make owners responsible for their roaming cats. Mm. So they are becoming a real issue in the electorate. And if you had one, I wanted you to I wanted to ask you whether you take control.
I can still talk about it. I mean, my dog Teddy is easier to contain than cats are, and I think that's part of the problem and why the Greens are raising this is
notoriously.
We know that cats, you know, our beautiful pets, if they're allowed to roam freely at night, do a lot of damage to wildlife and to our native birds and small animals, and it's a big problem. So I know that you know, we encourage, local government encourages people to contain their pets, and that's in most council areas voluntary, but a lot of councils in particular have been putting pressure on local constituents to keep their cats inside at night. And so, look, I haven't read the bill yet. I'll read it with great interest because I think we do need to do more. And it's about, I know some of the issues that have come up previously have been around how do you contain a cat that since birth has been a free roaming cat, easier to do with a new pet. But look, I'm not pretending to be an expert other than acknowledging there's a problem, happy to read the bill and give it some consideration.
Okay. And finally, with deference to your early career being inside radio stations.
Yes.
And noticing the fervour with which you were dancing earlier on in the studio.
I was.
maybe you'd like to introduce the Hoodoo Gurus and Good Times.
Okay. Well, on Eastside 89.7 FM, this is Kelly Sloan, finishing up with Alan and leaving you with some very good times at Bondi, thanks to the Gurus.
And thank you for joining us here today, Kelly Sloan.
All the good times we had, we'll have again. If your love is mine, it will stand up to the test of time.
FM Eastside Radio.
You have been listening to Eastside Radio podcast. For selections of more enjoyable content like this, visit our website, eastsidefm.org, and click on podcast.